Welcome to Reality Check, a weekly podcast about anything and everything having to do with education. I'm Jeannie Allen. I'm the CEO and founder of the Center for Education Reform, where we've been working for almost 25 years to expand education opportunity and innovation. Reality Check is a production of National Review. I hope you all will subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn so that every week you'll be sure to get the latest Reality Check podcast delivered right to your computer. I'm so pleased this afternoon on Reality Check to be talking to Colin Sharkey. Colin is Executive Vice President of the Association of American Educators, a non-union, a non-union professional educator association with members in all 50 states serving public school district employees, charter school educators, and any employees working in schools. AAE is an organization, I remember fondly starting many years ago to provide a really critical alternative to union-based professional support for teachers. And instead, this growing operation allows Colin and his team to spearhead a number of innovative projects, support its membership, and really be the aid and the support to our teachers that that they need and deserve. Prior to joining AAE, Colin served as the project coordinator for coalition relations at the Heritage Foundation. Before that, he worked at the Collegiate Network as a program officer, providing financial and technical assistance to nearly 100 independent college newspapers. It was a program of the Intercollegiate Studies Institute, ISI. Colin, you've been on Campus Magazine Online. You created the National Security Online Resource Center. You've blogged for National Review Online. So this is a little bit of a homecoming for you. Welcome. I am so pleased to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So, Colin, we've been talking about in the last few months across the country about a couple of pretty critical things happening in the teacher profession and that would impact the teacher profession. And so I'm going to jump into, for our listeners out there, the Janus Supreme Court case in just a couple of minutes. But first, I don't know how many of you out there listening really understand or fully appreciate the amazing contribution of the Association of American Educators. I mean, the vision really resonates with me. The teacher profession, quote, the teaching profession is student-oriented, well-respected, and personally fulfilling. You know, it just resonates with me so much. I was recently at the Global Education Skills Forum, which is an international event in Dubai, and one of the biggest topics was teacher quality, teacher recruitment, teacher retention. And there's so much going on out there that we tend to get obscured when we hear of, for example, of teachers striking. So what are the core issues out there? And tell us a little bit about AAE.
Sure, and that is a great place to start because, as you noted, AAE is a revolutionary approach to serving teachers with a pretty traditional model of just being a professional association, hoping to elevate the profession, perhaps police and define the profession from within, invest in the future of the profession. The myth has been that because of how the unions have operated, teachers must be on the other side of any change in education. And it's just not true. We think it's true because the only voice that we're hearing are large political organizations that represent the teachers at the local level all the way up to in Washington. And it's pretty much, as you know, the same repetitive, I don't want to call them solutions, but the same language again and again about how to address these issues, bordering on denial about what is it needs to be changed in education. And it's understandable to think, gosh, teachers must agree with this. They keep funding this operation. They keep showing up. There's busloads of teachers arriving to events. And yet it's actually a sliver of the overall profession being represented every time the union speaks. In part, and we'll discuss, if we're going to discuss the Janus case, we'll be discussing those who are forced into supporting unions or participating in unions, but also just because there had not been an alternative to that message. It's what teachers hear from the schools of ed in their first day in student teaching till the end of their career when someone is allegedly defending their pension and retirement.
And so it really does boil teaching then in so many cases down to just pay. And while we know pay is important, we all want to get paid for our work, what would you say the biggest issues facing teachers are? What have you seen revealed through AAE and its membership?
So we survey our entire membership on a number of issues. There's actually so much going on, so many different ideas being suggested in different states, that we have to limit our questions to respect the amount of time a teacher can spend delving into the policies and sharing with us their perspective and how it impacts their particular school. And then we break down the data to see how it differs between young teachers and experienced teachers and rural districts and urban districts, because you can see a lot of not disagreement, a lot of different solutions working in different places. One of the most significant issues that teachers face is many of the reforms and changes to education come with a limitation to their professional autonomy, and at the same time, they're telling us that's the number one contributor to their improved job satisfaction. It's not just teachers who think autonomy is critical for their satisfaction in their job and their effectiveness, but teachers certainly are experiencing with each new federal policy or program, more testing, more state requirements, even if they agree with the goals, they have to sacrifice some of their autonomy. And then, as you noted, the union's mostly just talking about across-the-board, one-size-fits-all compensation models that prioritize things like seniority over the effectiveness of a teacher, what that teacher brings to the classroom.
And tell us a little bit about also seniority and tenure. Everybody's heard those words. Many of us know what they mean, but I'm not entirely certain that the full scope and impact of what those policies are is fully understood, Colin.
Yeah, in fact, it's funny because we hire much of our staff from within the teaching corps, and they've never really worked in another profession. And so not having to negotiate their own contract, not having the job security that tenure purports to provide is so foreign to them. And yet for the rest of us who work or in the traditional workforce, we're looking at teaching and thinking, what a strange model to have this after 3 or 4 years of not causing any trouble, pretty much makes it very difficult to terminate you on any grounds if you've received tenure. There's a number of reforms that have been proposed to tenure. They are met with the sky is falling level messaging from the union. But the idea that because you've been in the job for a certain number of years, you then can be secure in that position for pretty much the rest of your career unless you do something particularly heinous. Seniority is a measure of how districts do things like decide which teachers to let go in a budget crisis. People also hear the reverse of the seniority focus, which is last in, first out policy, LIFO, where the new teachers, regardless of their effectiveness, their passion for their students, the tests of the student scores on testing, objective measure of their performance, if they were the last one hired, the contract requires the district to terminate that new, young, passionate teacher in favor of someone who has more years of service. And there's a tremendous amount to be said about experience, about veteran teachers mentoring young teachers and what they learn on the job versus what they were trained to do in schools of ed. So it's not to be said that these are completely irrelevant subject areas, but to put so much emphasis on just the number of years in service as the measure of pay and job security really cheats our students out of these young teachers and cheats these young teachers out of a career that they could be phenomenal in regardless of that kind of protection.
Not to mention the fact that as I learned when I attended the international forum I mentioned in Dubai recently, first of all, what was striking to me is that this is an issue that is all over the world, and that leaders from hundreds of other countries that I met, at least 120 different countries who attended this conference with me, Colin, had no problem having a hard conversation about these issues. Whereas when we question teacher-related policies, we are accused or thought to be hurtful or mean or somehow anti-public education. Yet ministers from other countries, even some that don't share our free market values, have no problem saying teacher quality is number one. So apparently the number is 60 million. We will need in this world 60 million new teachers to be able to teach our kids. In the U.S., is it close to 20 million over the next 10 years? Is that what I remember hearing at some point, Colin?
Certainly, because the turnover from the baby boomer generation is emptying a lot of seats. And then, as you said, if we're growing, we're going to need more teachers. And if the emphasis is on class size, you're going to need more teachers.
Right.
And we know we're hiring non-teachers. We're hiring a lot of the other staff in schools. Whether we should or not is worth the discussion, but we're certainly staffing up in the levels outside of the immediate classroom, too.
Right. So to then let go young people, or newer people, I should say, because a lot of people want to come to the classroom or could come to the classroom, maybe are career changers, or, you know, it's moms and dads whose kids are now old enough that they can switch professions, to turn them away because they don't have seniority when there are budget cuts. We really do have to just rethink the entire framing of the profession, right?
Right. It's a model that there's, you know, it's not as simple as just shutting it all down and saying we don't need any protection whatsoever, we don't need any conversation about what to do with experienced teachers who may cost more than a younger teacher. But the goal here isn't churning out as many widgets as possible and maximizing shareholder value, and therefore there's some give and take between the workforce and another goal. The goal couldn't be more noble about educating the next generation of kids, and to have false conversations or to forbid us to have real conversations about what teachers themselves witness every day, about people who need more support in order to remain in the workforce, in the teaching workforce, you know, they probably feel a lot like most people approach to politics now, where they're not too pleased with either side they're hearing. They're only being told one story from one side, but they think, oh, well, if the opposition wants to make sure teachers can be fired at the drop of a hat, and the union wants, you know, uncontrollable protection for senior teachers at the expense of everyone else, they don't like either option, and yet that's not the real conversation we should be having. What puts a great teacher in a classroom to make sure kids are getting a great education? That's the conversation that our teachers want to have, that parents and policymakers and taxpayers and the students would all like us to be having, but we're not, because that doesn't fit into the union model.
Right. So let's talk about that union model. Let's talk about AFSCME versus Janus and the Supreme Court case. We were with each other on the front steps of the Supreme Court for the arguments in January, I guess that was. Pretty thrilling scene from the podium, to put it mildly. What's at stake? And we've talked about it before on Reality Check. For those of you who have listened or want to check that out, we've actually talked to Mark Mix, the head of the National Right to Work Foundation, got into a lot of legal issues. But, Colin, for you, you bring a perspective as someone representing tens of thousands of teachers. What's at stake?
So the Janus case is going to apply to the public employees in states that are not currently right to work for public employees. It's about 5 million people in the public workforce in about 22 states, and that includes virtually all of the public education staff in those states. They are in unions, and currently they are required to pay a good portion of union dues in the range of 70 to 85% to the union, even if they don't want to be a member. That's the minimum that they can get away with paying, which is virtually all of the dues and all of the headache if they try to do it. If Mark Janus wins his case, which is arguing that it abridges a public employee's First Amendment rights to require that they pay a union for the activity of a union, which is inherently political. Negotiating with the government over how to spend tax dollars is inherently political activity, and requiring public employees to fund that activity is requiring them to fund political speech, which the First Amendment does not allow. And we hope that the Supreme Court decides that by June, when we expect the decision. If he wins, all of those public employees in those states will have the rights that the rest of the public employees have in the country to leave the union entirely and not have to pay anything. Even if there's still a union in their workplace, they're no longer funding the activity of that union. Their name and their money can no longer be used to advance the union's goals.
That would be pretty extraordinary. What did you Mark Janus was a public employee out of Illinois. He wasn't a teacher like the one before. What did you think about the potential for this to happen?
It could be significant. A lot of the power of the union in those states is false if people are funding it because they're forced to by law and not because they want to. There will be plenty of people who want to pay their union dues, who support the union's politics, or at the very least, they think the union has their best interests at heart or their goals for the profession. But we know that there are thousands and thousands of public educators who do not want to do that. In fact, they have already taken steps, which are sometimes very difficult, to become what's known as an agency fee payer, which is basically paying that minimum, that 75% or so minimum that was the current law. So they've gone through the process and the headache to get back just a little bit of their money. It's likely they will continue to do that and now get back all of their money, and yet the union had been, until now, being able to spend that funds on all of their activity. So in a way, the union could be resized to what is more accurately the support that they have within each of these professions. Some unions may have tremendous support even after this option is given because the members are satisfied with what the union's doing. Some may have, I don't want to say a number necessarily because each district's going to be different, but it could be a significant change in the number of members if those members who want to leave figure out how to do so. That's one thing that the case may not address is how easy it is to get out of a union, because right now it's not very easy to do that.
Right. And so after the case, if they rule in favor of Mark Janis, if teachers now have this new freedom and the educator freedom, then districts and teachers have to figure out how they're no longer going to be beholden. Do they have to, right, like currently right now, they have to opt out in any state that's not right to work, correct?
The non-right-to-work states, they're going through this agency fee process that's pretty complicated, and you're not getting a whole lot in return for it. After Janus, all public employees would have the right to leave their union, but how they get out, how easy it is to get out, is pretty much going to be left up to the unions and state statute. And we've already seen, in preparation for a Janus decision, the unions advancing legislation, or union allies advancing legislation, to make it even more difficult to leave the union. So even though the Janus decision may create and extend this right to all public employees, they may not be able to find the exit door because it's been hidden and it's only open for about 10 days a year, but they won't tell you which 10 days. And
really?
Oh, absolutely. It's already difficult in right-to-work states. The Janus decision really doesn't have much impact on a state like Nevada. But in Clark County, you can only leave the union between July 1st and July 15th each year. And you have to know that, which is not necessarily broadcast to each one of the union members who've signed up.
Exactly. And in fact, I don't think that's a common, certainly wasn't common knowledge for me, Colin, but I don't think that's common knowledge because I hear a lot of colleagues and friends say, oh, this isn't an issue in right-to-work states, period, end of story, as if it's easy to get out of the agency fee, arrangement, or it's easy to leave the union.
You'd think it'd be very American to let people decide, I do want to belong to this organization, here's where I send my money, I've changed my mind, I no longer want to, I won't renew, or I call and cancel my membership and I don't have to pay anymore. But because of the role the union plays, they're essentially kind of a government agent when they're the authorized bargaining agent for these districts, they have a little bit more control over how they're getting their funds. It usually goes through the payroll department. That's a convenience if you're a satisfied member. It makes you're paying your dues very easy. But if you've decided you don't want to pay your dues anymore and the union tells you, if you look closely at the fine print, your drop day is only 10 days from when you were hired every year, and it's the 11th day, so you have to pay dues the rest of the year, puts an employee in the awkward position of having to challenge their employer now, the district, to stop taking money out of their paycheck.
Right.
And how many teachers want to disrupt their relationship at work? Never mind the fact that they should be focused on what they love to do, which is educate students, not figure out how to get their own money back from a voluntary organization they don't want to be in anymore.
No, really, that's so true. So what's your estimate of if the Janus case were to be announced in late June and favor Mark Janus, and have this opportunity for teachers to buy into their freedom? Will there need to be a whole other advocacy effort and public relations effort, if you will, to help educate teachers about their rights?
Absolutely, yes. The challenges remain. We won't know yet what the court does decide and what the opinion itself will say until it's published and everyone can see it. But it's likely that it will not be so broad as to instantly free everybody from the union unless they choose to sign up or renew their membership. Most people who are a current union member who want to explore those rights would have to know where to go and what to do. they're pretty much just going to go to Google to try and figure out how do I get out. Right. They don't want to ask their colleagues. They don't want to cause any trouble. They're not going to get a whole lot of information out of their union rep or union headquarters. The employer can actually be put in an uncomfortable position of not knowing if they're allowed to provide the information because it could be seen as encouraging people to leave the union. So the employer might not actually feel comfortable sharing any information. And here you have this member who's sending hundreds of dollars to a political organization, over $1,000 in plenty of these districts that will be impacted by Janus, only because they can't figure out how to cancel this membership and they don't want to disrupt the job that they love to do and have invested their lives in doing. They don't want to threaten their career by causing too much trouble asking questions. So we will need a wide-scale information effort. AAE will be a part of doing this. We have been since our founding because in order for people to join AAE, some of them choose to leave the union entirely. They don't have to, but plenty of teachers realize the support they wanted they're going to get from AAE. So we have to help them figure out how to navigate this convoluted process. And to that end, we are trying our best to make the process easier, supporting any effort or lawsuit that can be done to try and simplify this process for our teachers who with whom we entrust so much. And we're going to be launching an information campaign to make sure that those who want to leave the union should not be prevented from doing so just because they're not sure how. If they want to stay in, that's fine. They're welcome to do that. That process is pretty darn easy to stay in the union. But if they want to find their way out and take their hard-earned money with them, they should be welcome to do so, and we'll try to make that as easy as possible for them.
And AAE provides teachers with what, Colin?
One of the core benefits built right into our membership is a liability insurance policy. More than just a liability insurance, which is really necessary if you're going to be in a classroom with a bunch of kids with litigious parents and things that can go wrong, our policy also provides some employment rights coverage. So this is access to attorneys if you are dealing with a job action at work. It's the kind of due process security that teachers deserve to have so that great teachers are not chased out of the profession because of a bad day or a misunderstanding or an interpersonal conflict at school, and yet the policy is not going to protect somebody who shouldn't be in a classroom anymore. That is the core benefit. There's other traditional professional association benefits like our newsletters and resources and professional development and participating in the national survey where even those who disagree with the majority have their voice heard because we'll show the breakdown of support and the trend, unlike the union kind of has a everyone agrees with this policy or we won't say it. We'll show the pie chart saying here's where the support is and here's why it's different from rural districts to urban districts or charter schools to district schools. And then, discounts and shopping and GEICO insurance and things like that. And they're paying much, much less than what they were paying to the union.
Well, and the interesting thing is that if you look at the history, as you well know, in the history of teachers' associations, it was association. Union was not in the name, National Education Association. Federation of Teachers, which did come around later during a time of public unionism. But look, it was to be a professional support to educators and to be a conduit for good policy. And those of us who appreciate advocacy and good policy in any field can appreciate that teachers need something. But when they began, it's like Al Shanker, you've heard the famous comment, the founding president of the AFT or one of the early presidents, when the kids start paying union dues, we'll start representing kids. There really is a militancy, divisiveness, and ideology to the unions today that was not around. In our relatives' days, in our mom's day, among our great teachers, it's really turned a corner. Can you talk about why that is? I know AAE is not anti-union. You're really pro-teacher freedom. But why the change in the way teachers' unions behave? Is it really just come down to power and money?
I think that plays a significant role. I mean, there are certainly educators that need significant protection, that the situation that they've been in, that warrants the level of support that a union could bring to protect their job. Basically, an excellent educator who is making life uncomfortable for the administration. It doesn't benefit kids for that person to be chased out of the school over a trivial matter. So they deserve significant protection, and the union can provide that. They're not required to, and they also don't necessarily discriminate between those teachers and the ones who make headlines for all kinds of atrocious behavior. And if you think about it, which educator, quote, needs the union more? What educator needs to have that level of support and adversarial militancy might be the right word in a lot of these districts, but not in all of them. It's that educator who otherwise would be challenged under a lot of the reforms and expectations that we're putting on the profession. There's also something to be said for how the rest of the labor movement in the country has shifted with the workforce. The private unions have declined while the public unions have grown, and it's left the teachers' union as essentially the leader in a lot of ways of the broader labor movement, which has had a very political history. There's a lot of sympathy for, many of the private unions and especially very dangerous fields and in first responders and things that they're, I guess, benefiting from, that still love and respect for hard work that unions represented. Mm-hmm. But from this completely different workforce, still a very challenging work, very noble work, sometimes dangerous work, sadly, but using that to advance the same old goals that the unions had for 100-plus years, radical political goals.
Right.
And I guess that leads to a much more adversarial, combative tone in order to accomplish those goals, which I think you could also argue, have they been very effective? If that actually is their purpose, which I'm not sure they'll outright admit to you or I, but if that's the purpose, have they been all that effective? Has all the money in politics accomplished what it is they're looking for? Have they sacrificed or mortgaged the reputation of teachers, the love of the public school, in order to try to advance these goals that they haven't been wildly effective at doing?
Right. $60 million in political spending that we know of and that we can see, not including all of the resources, the time when they put teachers out to canvass and other union members. Oftentimes teachers don't go canvass. It's oftentimes non-teachers from other unions. Colin, final question for you. I mean, there's just so much to be talked about, and I'd urge everybody to look up AAE. Your website again is
AAEteachers.org.
AAEteachers.org. So let's, I think that the final kind of comment I'd like to just ask you is, who was your favorite teacher?
I have lots of favorite teachers, but we were forced to choose one for the website so everybody could list their favorite teacher. And I just had to say my 10th grade teacher, Ted Wiener, was a no-nonsense, phenomenal English teacher, but a no-nonsense guy as well. Very funny and personable, and you could have very honest conversations with him, but he really didn't let you get away with any nonsense, and I was guilty of getting away with that. I was good enough at school that I didn't have to work as hard in some classes, and he didn't tolerate it, and he called me out on it. And I'd say it took me a couple years to really embrace everything he was trying to do, but I don't want to think what I would have been if he hadn't done that, and how many kids might not have that in their lives at some point or at the right point. So I have a tremendous amount of gratitude for many of my teachers, but I do know that 10th grade English taught me a lot more lessons than just literature.
Well, it certainly sounds like it. Colin, you've been fantastic to be with me today on Reality Check. Our guest has been Colin Sharkey, Executive Vice President of the Association of American Educators. Thanks again, Colin Sharkey. You've been listening to Reality Check. This is Jeannie Allen. Reality Check is produced by National Review and posted at nationalreview.com in association with CER, the Center for Education Reform. If you like what you heard in this podcast, and I hope you did, you might want to subscribe for free to make sure you don't miss any future programs. Please sign up at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or TuneIn. I'm Jeannie Allen.